and information. This is Radio 3.
Good morning from me, Peter Lewis, and welcome to Money Talk on Radio 3. It's 8:03 in Hong Kong on Thursday, the 5th of August. The private sector in Hong Kong continued to expand last month, but at a slower pace. The IHS Markit's Hong Kong PMI was at 51.3 in July, little changed from 51.4 a month earlier. That was the sixth straight month of growth in the private sector, with both output and new orders expanding for the fourth straight month. Growth in China's services sector accelerated in July, a private survey showed yesterday, but the spread of the COVID-19 Delta variant across the country threatens to undercut the recovery. The Caixin Services PMI came in at 54.9 last month, compared to expectations of 50.5 and the previous month's reading of 50.3. The rate of growth in America's services sector picked up sharply last month, according to the latest report from the Institute for Supply Management. The ISM's services sector index rose to a record high of 64.1 last month, compared with 60.1 in June. The survey noted worsening labour and materials shortages, raising fears of inflation picking up further in the coming months. But there was disappointing employment data from payroll processor ADP ahead of Friday's non-farm payrolls report from the US government. ADP said private employers added 330,000 new jobs in July, the smallest gain in 5 months and well below economists' forecasts of 695,000. Federal Reserve Vice Chair Richard Clarida said the US central bank was on track to begin interest rate rises at the start of 2023. He said progress had been made towards the Fed's goal of full employment and the 2% average inflation target, which now warranted an adjustment to the central bank's $120 billion per month bond buying program. On today's Money Talk, we're joined by Andrew Ferris of Econosis Advisory and Carlos Casanova from Union Bancaire Privé. With a view from Taiwan is Ross Feingold at SafePro Group. As always, we welcome your comments and questions. Text 63935925. Email moneytalk at rthk.hk. Post on our Facebook page, Money Talk on RTHK Radio 3. Or send us a tweet at Money Talk Radio 3. Money Talk on RTHK Radio 3. US stocks fell overnight after mixed data on the US economy. The S&P 500 index slipped 0.5% from its record high set on Tuesday to finish at 4,402. The Dow closed near its session low at 34,792, down 324 points on the day. The Nasdaq Composite Index, though, rose 0.1% to 14,780. Trading in shares of online commission-free brokerage firm Robinhood was halted several times during the day to calm volatility as retail investors flocked to the stock, sending it surging by 82% at one stage and taking its valuation above that of carmaker Ford and foods company Kraft Heinz before closing 50% higher and taking its gains for the week to more than 100%. Robinhood was by far the most mentioned stock over the past 24 hours on the Reddit thread Wall Street Bets. The Pan-European Stock 600 index gained 0.6% to reach another record high. In London, the FTSE 100 closed 0.25% higher. Here in Hong Kong, stocks advanced yesterday, led by the technology sector, as investors weighed growth prospects against regulatory risks. The Hang Seng Index climbed by 232 points, or 0.9%, to 26,426. Enter Sport jumped 4.7% after the Chinese government said it planned to expand the size of the sports sector to 5 trillion yuan by 2025. Shares of electric car maker BYD jumped 8.3% to a record close, and both those sectors are seen as relatively safe from the regulatory crackdown. Tencent rebounded almost 2.4% after Chinese state media toned down its criticism of the online video games industry, which accounts for 30% of Tencent's revenues. Tencent closed 6.1% lower on Tuesday after state media compared the gaming industry to opium. In a more measured article on Wednesday, the People's Daily said that China should better protect minors from dangers of the internet, such as vulgarity, violence, and other elements that endanger the physical and mental health of minors. Shares of Alibaba fell 0.6% after the e-commerce giant reported slowing growth in the second quarter and revenues missed estimates for the first time in more than 2 years. On the mainland, the Shanghai Composite Index was up 0.9% at 3,477. In the commodities markets, oil prices tumbled once again as demand fears grew over the spread of the Delta variant in China and other Asian nations. Brent crude oil is down 2.7% at $70.33 a barrel. Gold is trading at $1,813 an ounce. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield jumped from the day's low of 1.13% to 1.21% before settling one basis point higher at 1.18% after Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Richard Clarida said the US Central Bank was on track to begin interest rate rises at the start of 2023. And the US dollar ended the day 0.2% firmer against a basket of currencies. The euro this morning trading at $1.18 and a third cents. The dollar's worth 109.5 Japanese yen. Sterling is trading at $1.38.9 and 10 Hong Kong dollars and 80 cents. And the Chinese yuan is at 6.46.5 versus the dollar. Bitcoin, that rallied 4% to trade back around $40,000. Quick look around Asian stock markets. A flat open for the ASX 200 in Australia this morning. In Japan, the Nikkei 225 up a third of a percent. Looks like a small rise for the Hang Seng of about 0.1% at the open later on this morning. It's 8:10. Let's go and welcome our guests. Andrew Ferris, the CEO of Econosis Advisory, is with us. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
And also with us too, Carlos Casanova, Senior Asia Economist at Union Bancaire Privé. Morning, Carlos.
Good morning.
Growth in China's services sector accelerated in July. A private survey showed on Wednesday, but the spread of the COVID-19 Delta variant across the country threatens to undercut the recovery. The Caixin Services PMI came in at 54.9 compared to expectations. Expectations of 50.5, and it was at 50.3 in the previous month. Caixin Insight Group warned that the impact from the latest round of outbreaks since late July was likely to hurt August PMI readings. But it stands in contrast with findings of an official survey on Saturday, which showed growth in the services sector decelerated slightly in July. Andrew and Carlos, what are your thoughts on where we are at the China economy now? We've had all sorts of data out over the last week.
Good morning. So we've definitely seen a bit of a mixed picture there with the Caixin services PMI increasing by the most in, I believe, quite a number of years. There is two things that are important to understand. First of all, the nature of the indicator is very volatile. And second, that pickup in services is likely reflecting normalcy in the south of China following from COVID-19 lockdowns in the province of Guangdong in June. So, of course, the Caixin Index, which also, by the way, incorporates a larger number of smaller companies, showed quite a big, expansion on the month. But Caixin themselves, they were very quick to point out that the recent COVID-19 outbreak will probably lead to a decline again starting in August. So I think the main takeaway for investors is look past the sort of volatility in the data, look at the broader trend, also taking into account the official PMI by MBS. And the trend there is of tapering growth momentum, both on the export side and on the domestic front.
That's a problem of looking at numbers, you know. They confuse the issue, as you said. Don't confuse me with facts. I won't take an opposite view. I completely agree with what Carlos said. But, for example, if I look at the official index, the CFLP, which contains a much wider sample of also of big firms, I'm afraid the composite is effectively coming down for 3 months running. And the export orders, because supposedly China is driven by exports, also has been coming down for 3 months. the retail index, forget now the PMI indexes, the retail index is down year on year for 3 months, and the cumulative ditto. Mm-hmm. So if I look at China, which is driven overwhelmingly by domestic factors, not external factors, it doesn't look good. And the recent clampdown, which we are going through it now, is going to be reflected later on. The thing that I know I'm not changing the subject, but this is it is germane to the point where I'm really clenching my teeth to see what's going to happen when we have the May-June figures for India that will reflect the major second wave that hit the country. You know, these things are backwards looking, but it shows you the kind of wounds these things inflict.
Okay. Well, how the Politburo seems very concerned about the economy. When it met on Friday, it sounded worried about the global epidemic situation. Do you think that means now that we're going to see an easing of monetary policy on the mainland and more support for smaller businesses?
Well, as expected, the Politburo touted the line that monetary policy is now neutral. Meaning
always says that, doesn't it?
It's always prudent, but now it's neutral. So that, in our opinion, means that they, at the very least, there will be no more policy tightening. In fact, the language was assertive enough to say that all of the tightening that was required this year had already taken place in the first half of the year. So in the second half, they look to calibrate liquidity conditions, preferably through open market operations. But given the severity of the outbreak in China, if that drags on consumption, which is really what they are worried about, right? We are looking to pivot away from investment-led growth to consumption-led growth, and that is unfortunately taking place slower than expected. So they really look to boost consumption. If we continue to see weakness on that front, then it is possible that the stance might be a little bit more accommodative than neutral in the remainder of the year.
Well, about a month ago, they cut the reserve requirements of PBOC, and that follows of the three cuts last year. So I'm always a bit doubtful as to exactly what it means, as Carlos said, about the neutrality or the calibration. You know, my reaction is, Peter, you will remember that in the 1960s in the UK, the famous expression, they would say that, wouldn't they?
Yes, that was the Profumo affair, wasn't it?
Oh, good God, it shows you how incredibly old we are. Yeah.
I remember that well, although I was quite young then. But I remember the film about it, which was very good. Mm. Let me ask you about Hong Kong. The private sector in Hong Kong continued to expand last month, but at a slower pace. The IHS Market Hong Kong PMI was 51.3 in July, which was little changed from 51.4 a month earlier. But the sixth straight month of growth in the private sector, both output and new orders, expanded for the fourth straight month. Overseas demand for Hong Kong goods eased for a second month, but was at a faster pace compared to June, and orders from China fell for the second month as well. What do you think? Is the Hong Kong economy on the path to recovery, do you think?
Well, the retail sales are bound to reflect the 2,000 that has just been released per month, not simply per family, but per every single Hong Kong ID permanent card holder. And that's going to be repeated for effectively something like 4 months going. It's a substantial sum of money, and it is specifically focused on the retail side. So, you know, I will not be surprised if numbers will show this, but unfortunately, this is a one-off. Mm-hmm. In other words, this is not something that lifted retail spending permanently, let's say because the frontiers opened and quazillions of Chinese tourists are now flooding in on a permanent basis. That's not going to happen. We just saw today that they're even stopping Hong Kongese coming back, never mind Chinese going through it, which is very interesting because it points out that the political control of mainland China most definitely does not include their own citizens, in inverted commas. I mean, I'm using the wrong expression here, being allowed to come through Hong Kong. Hong Kong very much runs its own border policy as far as this side of the affairs are concerned.
From my side, I think there's another factor that has been driving better activity in Hong Kong. I mean, it doesn't take an economist to tell you that the retail sector is improving.
Thank God for that.
If you were out and about in town this weekend, you might have noticed that everyone was busy consuming with the vouchers. But interestingly, and potentially as a result of that correction on the equity space, we have seen a lot of that excess liquidity actually being channeled into the housing sector. And the housing sector being such an important part of the investment strategy for many households in Hong Kong, that has contributed to a favorable base effect, also more conducive to consumption. So insofar as we continue to see this trend on the housing front, I think that will exert upside pressures on GDP growth. And indeed, we did revise our growth forecast from 4.5 to 5.5% this year.
Peter and Carlos, what really concerns me is that tourism influx, or rather...
lack of.
It's complete lack of. I mean, the last numbers that I've seen is the increase, or rather the decrease in tourism, sort of 99.9999%, effectively. There is no tourism in Hong Kong. So I'm really amazed, because sometimes as much as 30% of the services sector, particularly consumption and hotels, were primarily pinned down on Chinese tourism, which accounted for 70% of all arrivals. So it's either incredibly resilient, or we have been fooled all these years that tourism is such an important side of the sector. But then if you look at hotels, you get a very, very different story. Okay.
Mm. What do you make of the easing then of the quarantine requirements? Because so far we've been effectively cut off from not just mainland China, but from the rest of the world as well. But the government's now going to relax them so that people can come here from countries considered medium risk, and they only have to quarantine for 1 week. Is that going to help?
It is absolutely necessary that they do that. You know, there are two conditions for Hong Kong to maintain its status as a global financial center: free mobility of capital and free mobility of labor, or human resources. Currently, owing to the severity of the global pandemic, we haven't had free mobility of labor, but that is something that really needs to be corrected. And they have attempted to resolve this in many botched ways in the past few months. The only way forward, in my opinion, is to really lower the quarantine restriction for vaccinated individuals. That it would be more effective than singling out a specific industry, you know, that accounts for a very large chunk of GDP at the expense of everyone else. So really, it's going to be about the vaccination drive and allowing individuals with vaccines to come in. If we don't see a shift away from zero tolerance. A zero-tolerance stance in China as a result of the latest outbreak, which would, of course, then influence the view here as well.
And if you read the small print, not that it really matters here, because this is not exactly one of the major sources of influx of tourism in UK, in Hong Kong, the flights from UK are still banned. I'll say that very slowly. Mm. There are no flights from UK. So now Hong Kong said everybody in UK, especially the students, everybody that got trapped, is welcome to come in. How?
Yes, I mean, and still 3 weeks quarantine when you arrive.
By chariot? I mean, by walk? I mean, if there are no flights. Well, this is disingenuous. I'm not quite sure whether this is a small stick which has been used to wrap UK for sending the Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier. But if it was, it's really meaningless, actually.
Let me get both of your thoughts on the regulatory crackdown that's going on at the moment, because obviously that's been the big factor in the last couple of weeks. Badly affected Chinese stocks listed all around the world, wiped about $1 trillion worth off of them last week. Obviously, the education sector has been hard hit after Beijing effectively told online education firms they can no longer make a profit. Then we had the gaming industry this week, the latest sector to come under intense pressure from state media. What do you make of this, and what do you think is the end game here, and also the impact on the economy as well?
We've been discussing increased regulation in China for quite a few months, and in fact, our own allocation is now neutral to slightly underweight compared to...
Because of this? Because of the increased regulation?
Well, since October last year, there has been a trend towards increased regulation and certain types of policies that would entail weaker future earnings growth for the type of companies that, you know, experience very significant growth both in revenues and valuations in the past few years. So yes, it does reflect this. It's part of a longer term trend. We have three top-down macro themes. So they're looking at things like data security. They're looking at things like financial fragility. So anyone that is big enough to cause a potential shock to the economy, and that includes housing companies, asset management companies, banks, etc. And they are also, of course, looking at all of the aspects related to social cohesion and you know, ensuring that the country is able to move towards common prosperity. You know, they have to show something ahead of the October 2022 20th Party Congress, where Xi Jinping will officially start his third term. So they are looking to put the house in order now that they have a little bit of tailwind on the growth front. So we have been reacting to that in the past few months.
Andrew, I would have thought that the end goal is not a bad one, is it, to try and reduce the costs of education, stop children getting addicted to online games. But hasn't the implementation of this gone horribly wrong?
Well, hang on a minute. I'll take that in two parts. First, my position, this is what I'm telling clients. I drew two columns. One is marked United States and the other is marked China. And underneath is control over IPOs and inflows or outflows of capital. And there are the two terrible twins. They're both working together. The Chinese took a leaf out of United States' page. So, you know, if the investors are reacting to what's happening in China, I will say, hello, look what's happening in the United States. They're about to pass a law that effectively, since the Chinese cannot fulfill the requirements that within 3 years they have to have U.S. standard accounting standards before they are allowed to operate, never mind having an IPO.
And what's wrong with that?
Bye-bye to them. Nothing's wrong with them, but hang on a minute. It's not the Chinese that are hitting their own firms. It's the Americans that set a good example, and the Chinese are following it spot on. I will say, hang on a minute. They're already down on the floor, and they're hitting them. So I find this a little bit disingenuous to turn around and say, look what the terrible things the Chinese are doing to themselves. At the same time, what exactly the same things are happening on Chinese companies by the United States. Very funny. As for the education, I disagree violently. Okay, I think the Chinese got absolutely the wrong end of the stick. The para-educational sector in China is a symptom. It is a symptom whereby the state puts an enormous emphasis and pressure and money and resources at the top-end universities, and then the schools are not left with their equivalent resources to train the students in order to be able to compete adequately. And guess what? When this happens, the private sector steps in.
It's not just a problem of China, is it? This happens elsewhere.
Oh, Japan, South Korea, India. I'll clear my throat. Greece. You know, I can tell you, I'm an expert on para-educational sectors. Okay, so I thought I really gritted my teeth, and I thought, what a stupid thing to say. And it is also all about social equality. Please give me a break. If you want social equality, you pile money into the primary education sector and you'll see how quickly the para education sector is going to disappear.
I think we need you back to talk more about this. Clearly you've got a lot to say, but sadly we've run out of time. That's Andrew Ferris, the CEO of Econosis Advisory. Carlos Casanova, who's senior Asia economist at Union Bancaire Privé.
You're listening to Money Talk on RTHK Radio 3.
RTHK Radio 3. It's 8:25. On the phone from Taipei is Ross Feingold, Business Development Director at SafePro Group. Morning, Ross.
Good morning.
Let's continue that conversation then on this latest crackdown on various sectors, because you examine business risks for companies and how they're susceptible to sudden changes in policy and regulation. So what do you make of this swathe of policy changes and regulations that we're seeing on the mainland at the moment?
Well, I think another aspect of this is also we have companies listed overseas. They're listed in New York, for example, where they have foreign investors, private equity before the companies list publicly, regardless of which market they list on. So some of these companies have a high level of interaction, maybe even foreign directors. So I think there's also a concern from the government in China about the level of interaction, one might even say direction, that they would have to take from foreign ownership. So this is another way to try and squeeze that. But another aspect of this that I'm also following is the reaction from authorities in the United States and potentially other places. It's not necessarily to defend these companies or to say we have to let the free market do its thing. Instead, it's more of telling either the companies too bad or telling investors you shouldn't have invested in the first place, right? There's an aspect of sort of guilt tripping, whether it's private equity or institutional investors, for investing in China or investing in Hong Kong. We saw the U.S. issue that business risk report a few weeks ago. So we're not exactly seeing sympathy from foreign governments either. It just shows how much the dynamics have shifted.
But when Beijing tries to regulate things like the tech sector, sort of clamp down on monopolistic practices and on squeezing out rivals, aren't they doing exactly the same as what the US is doing with its big companies and what the EU is trying to do?
It's a great question for the U.S. simply because we don't really know the answer yet. The Biden administration is only in office 6 months. They're still filling in positions for things like regulation of monopolies and different industries. They're getting pushed from the conservatives to crack down because the conservatives think that big tech is too friendly to liberals. And the liberals say that big tech is making too much money off of the average consumers like us. So I would say watch this space, whereas, yeah, for Europe, certainly. I mean, the European Union regulators have become legendary. And I'll have some American bias here for investigating or finding the big American tech companies like a Google or a Microsoft. So China can try and make that argument, of course, in the court of public opinion globally. China's arguments are not very popular right now, so we'll have to watch how that plays out.
So what are overseas investors supposed to do? Because when you look at investing in any market, you do look for stability and certainty of policy and regulation and tax, and that just isn't happening on the mainland at the moment.
Another interesting aspect in response to that question is we do see institutional investors who are willing to talk to the media about this, which is a relatively sensitive topic in recent days. Some of them say, look, we're in for the long term. We've seen this before. We're trying to understand what's involved, what industries might be targeted, what the concerns of the authorities are. But we're not fleeing either because a lot of them still like the positive fundamentals of China. And then we do see some investors say, it's too opaque. I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to flee. So it also comes down to the risk appetite of investors. But people who've been in the market for a long time, I think even in China or other developing countries, they've seen this before.
But these investors that say we're in it for the long term, when they've just seen some of their stocks collapse 80-90% in just a few days, they really have no choice but to be in it for the long term now, do they?
Well, yeah, they certainly don't want to talk about their losses. In fact, they want investors to put more money in. So, I mean, look, that comes with the job is being positive and talking up the market and the long-term potential, whether you're on the buy side or the sell side, I suppose.
The Chinese regulator, the CSRC, has said it wants to work more closely with the SEC on Chinese IPOs that are listed over there. Do you think there's much chance of that happening?
That's pretty unlikely in the current environment of U.S.-China relations. I think it's clear the direction of the Chinese government is they prefer big Chinese companies, emerging companies, not make the U.S. their destination of choice, and they make it Hong Kong or Shanghai the preferred listing destination. So I would say that's a bit of polite diplomatic bureaucratic speak, but I wouldn't expect it. And also, any kind of loosening or attempt by the SEC to negotiate something that is a relaxation of U.S. regulations or a softening or not a really strict implementation when it comes to Chinese companies is going to come under enormous criticism from the U.S. Congress.
Okay, Ross, thanks very much. That's Ross Feingold, Business Development Director at SafePro Group in Taipei.
You're listening to Money Talk on RTHK Radio 3.
In the markets this morning, the ASX 200 in Australia still flat, the Nikkei 225 in Japan up 0.5%, the KOSPI in South Korea up 0.2%, and looks like a small rally for the Hang Seng at the open, also of about 0.2%. Gold is trading at $1,811 an ounce, Brent crude oil at $70.56 a barrel. Do please tune in again tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock for Money Talk, and stay tuned to Radio 3 for Back Chats with Jim Gould and Jenny Lamb in just a moment. The weather forecast, cloudy with occasional showers, thunderstorms and squalls. There is a thunderstorm warning in force at the moment. The maximum temperature is going to be about 30 degrees, and then occasional showers in the next couple of days. And then the weather's going to improve gradually during the weekend. 27 degrees right now, 91% relative humidity. Coming up to 8:32, here's Barry O'Rourke with the half-hour news.
With the exception of Guangdong, all arrivals from the mainland will once again have to go into quarantine as COVID cases continue to grow across the border. The Hong Kong government announced the move just before 9 o'clock last night. Earlier, it had placed the same restrictions on Macau. Yesterday, Macau began testing its entire 600,000 population after a family contracted the highly infectious Delta variant. Richard Pine reports.
There will now be no quarantine exemption for mainland arrivals unless they have just been in Guangdong in the previous 2 weeks. Instead, Hong Kong residents returning from the mainland under the Return to HK scheme will have to do 14 days of home quarantine. They face three tests during that period and two afterwards, only becoming free from testing on the 20th day. The shorter 7-day quarantine period for fully vaccinated people no longer applies.
Infectious diseases expert Leung Chee Chew welcomed the government's move, but he said quarantine arrangements should also be tightened and that arrivals should stay at designated hotels rather than at home.
For areas, for airports, with long risk of outbreak, long cases of outbreak, we need to tighten it up to make it compose arrangement for quarantine at designated hotels. And we should consider that if we see community transmission within Macau within the next few days in their compulsory testing.
The overnight compulsory COVID testing operations at a block of flats in Sham Shui Po and at a hotel in Tsim Sha Tsui have been completed, with health authorities so far finding no cases. Officials said they tested a total of 730 people, with the exercise ending just before 7 a.m. At about 8 o'clock last night, the government cordoned off Block A of Tung Lo Court on Tai Po Road and the Lux Manor Hotel on Kimberley Road. The buildings had been linked to two possible COVID cases, a construction worker with no travel history and a local student. The latter is a close contact of the Macau family with the Delta variant. The government also issued compulsory testing notices for 22 locations. They include two construction sites in Wan Chai, a Fairwood restaurant in Shep Kip Mei and another in Wan Chai, a Welcome supermarket on Nathan Road in Jordan and Immigration Tower. The World Health Organization has urged wealthy governments to halt plans for coronavirus booster jabs and instead concentrate on improving vaccination rates in poorer countries. The head of the agency, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said he could not accept that vulnerable people would remain unprotected while the richest were vaccinated for a third time. But the White House press spokesman, Jen Psaki, disagreed this was the case.
We feel that it's a false choice and that we can do both. We've taken action on the global level far more than any country around the world. We're asking the global community to also step up. We saw some action at the G7. More needs to happen.
More news on the hour from RTHK.